Now we're getting back to the issue of the idea of the witness offering opinion in the masu matan of a trial. So in the case of dinei nefashos, the chachamim maintain, contrary to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Huda, that the aid is prohibited, debarred, from giving an opinion, from stating an opinion. Either way, whether the opinion is for conviction, l'chol, or whether the opinion is for acquittal, for schus. And the reason that's stated is because mefseh kinogeya beiduso. It appears to be in conflict with his edus. And it's not altogether clear what that means. However, the way the Gemara explains it, essentially it explains it with regard to his capacity to offer an opinion for acquittal. There's a conflict in terms of acquittal. What's the conflict in terms of acquittal? We are concerned that he may have gotten so-called cold feet, that he may nischaret. He may have had a change of heart because he has now put himself in jeopardy. He's now in a position of jeopardy by virtue of his testimony, which has been accepted. There's a position of jeopardy which could cause loss of life if there should come forth edim that can be mazim him. He's subject to hazama, impeachment, as we say. If that is the case, then the penalty of do unto him as he sought to do to his brother would come into effect. However, we are aware of the technicality, that that is only applied to him after the court reaches a gemar din. If these secondary edim would come before that, he would be disqualified. Certainly he'd be disqualified, but he would not be subject to the punishment of do unto him as he sought to do. It's only after the gemar din. So once there's a gemar din for conviction, the edim are now in a situation of jeopardy vis-a-vis edim zomimin. So therefore, for them to offer opinions for acquittal carries the possibility, the appearance of contradicting, of being contrary to the edus, because there's a self-interest involved. There's a motive that we can detect, a possible motive. Of course, you're not saying for sure. Could be that they're completely honest witnesses, and they're also very completely honest in terms of their evaluation of the din. But the appearance is there due to this factor. That's the position of the Chachamim. As we've seen, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda permits them to argue for Schlos, but not for Chov. So apparently he's not concerned with this issue. We'll put that aside for the time being. However, as we've seen, there is a machlokas rishonim with regard to the position of the Chachamim, who have prevented the Edom, for this reason, from arguing in a case of dinei nefashos. Now the question is, well, what about dinei mamonos? And here we have a clear machlokas in the Rishonim. The Meiri, and according to his opinion, the Rif as well, hold that the same should apply in all cases then, in dinei mamonos as well. Because the phenomenon of Hazama, if that's what it's based upon, exists there as well. And even though the stakes are not that high, he doesn't stand to lose his life, it's just a matter of time. Nevertheless, we can always, if that's an issue, if that's a problem, that he stands to lose from the conviction, and therefore he might be arguing for acquittal because he wants to protect himself, so then that could be applied there as well. However, the others, the Rambam clearly doesn't learn that way. The Rambam learns it's very specific that this is only in a case of nefashos, that once they've testified in the matter of nefashos, then they have to be quiet. They have to be silent. But in dinei mamonos, no problem. And as one of the Rishonim explained yesterday, that in dinei mamonos, there's no difference between schus and chol. Who said that?
The Ron holds
that they can testify in dinei mamonos, because over there he says there is no difference, virtually, between schus and chal. As we've already established that point, schus,
right.
It's all relative, because since he's dealing with mamonis, it involves two parties. So one party always wins, one party always loses. So therefore we can't really identify a specific category of schus. Whereas in the case of Dina Nefashos, there's only one person. There's only one person involved, so either he wins or he loses. You can't say that nobody wins, nobody loses over there. Okay. At this point in time, is it clear to everybody? Nisan? Yoni? Seth? Ben?
Josh.
I assume Jacques? It's clear. You don't have to, you know. No, just I need to know if it's clear. If it's not clear, then it has to be further explained. I didn't do a good job. It's my fault. There's an interesting Rashi on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph, the Rabbanan. And they say, he explains the position of the Chacham, that even the Schus, they can't argue. Mishum de Nogehu B'davar, Shem Eschareipo B'davar, Shem Ayigmar Adin L'chova, V'yaviza Eidem Lazimon. Okay? So Rashi is explaining the motive, which everybody seems to accept. That there's definitely a possibility, there's legitimate ground for the fear that the Edom want to retract. So it's retraction. Now Rashi mentioned something else, but Umahadir Lamasi Hafi. They can't retract. Lach Kedibur, after Kedibur. The Kivan Shehigid Shuva and Chozer Umagid. So Rashi is because of the principle that we've learned. That once they testified, Shiva and Chozer Umagid. This statement becomes extremely important in understanding what's going on. Because essentially, it would seem to me that the underlying reason for the disqualification of the Edom from arguing is because in one form or another, it really does violate the principle of Kivan Shehigid Shuveni Chozer Magid. And this forces us to look more deeply into that principle, which until now we just accepted in a simplistic way because we had no reason to go further. What exactly is the principle of Kivan Shehigid Shuv Eino Chozer Umagid? Well, one, for one, it would seem that once they've testified, they're debarred from any further testimony. They can't do any further testimony. So it's a din in the testimony per se, that's it, that anything they say after that, it does not have the status of testimony. But it's quite possible that there's another principle at work over here. And that is that there is not so much that it's based upon the fact that that's it, they can no longer testify, they're disqualified from further testimony, but there is a prohibition on the Edom to do anything which causes us to cast doubt upon the original testimony. They're not allowed to disqualify the original testimony. That's why they can't speak up. Now, if that is the case, that there is a separate prohibition upon the Edom to do anything which causes us to cast doubt on the validity, the veracity on the Edus, so then there are really two ways in which that can come about, and now you'll understand the expression of why one of the Rishonim, I think it's the Meiri, says. Well, who's it that explains that the reason why it's mechse?
The Meiri
says mechse. The reason why it's mechse kenogei be'edus is because it's not testimony mamash. If it was actual testimony, then it would be nogei be'edus per se. So you see, that's the concept of nogei be'edus. But here it's mechse because it's not that direct. But it has the same effect. Therefore, anything that the Eidim do in a formalistic manner, obviously. It has to be within the context of the trial itself. Outside the trial, they're not concerned. It has no legal consequences. But anything that they do which has the effect of casting doubt upon the veracity of the original Eidus is disqualified, because Beis Din has to paskin on the basis of Eidus, and the Eidus has to be MS. Vehine MS? Nachon hadava. That's the when it says that the darashta v'chakarta heitev, that's the instruction. That's what we learn at Rishon Chakiva. Beis Din has to interrogate the Eidim, that's the whole idea. What's the whole objective of Drisha v'Chakira? To produce the result, v'hine MS, and it is true, nachon ha-davar, it's accurate. That is to say that the, as far as the Eidim is concerned, it's true and it's accurate. So it has to be free from any kind of a blemish. And therefore, because of that, Eidim cannot go and say things afterwards. They shut him out. They can't say anything, because that's going to remove the chal shem of MS and nachon, which means true and accurate. Therefore, we say that there's another way in which they can cast doubt upon the Eidus. And that is, if they were to render an opinion, and that the rendering of such an opinion would create the impression that they're retracting, that it's retraction. They can't retract the Eidus. So there's two ways, of course, you can retract the Eidus. One is through Eidus itself, but that's the actual halacha, which states that they can't testify. Now we're learning that in certain cases, offering a certain type of an opinion would have the effect of impugning the validity of the original Eidus. And you couldn't say Emes Nachon Adava. So Emes Nachon Adava demands that they be prevented from a certain type of participation, which would have the effect of casting aspersion upon the original Eidus. All right, that makes a lot of sense. Right? Now it seems to me that's the position of the Chacham. And if you look at Rashi, right, what Rashi is saying. Because he's saying they want to really retract, but they can't actually retract. So now they're going to use a different method of retracting, but the effect is going to be the same. The effect is going to be to cast doubt on the validity of the Eidus. So now that the question is, the machlokus between the two positions would seem, how do we understand the issue of mechse? We have a new category of mechse kenogeya beidus, an appearance of conflict with the Eidus. And it seems to me that there are two ways that you can formulate it. I'll express those two ways, then see if you can take it from there. Tell me who says which. One way is to say that once the Gavra is an aid, once he's an aid, once he gives testimony, so he's now regarded, since he's testified against someone, and that testimony will bring about a consequence, then he is now regarded as an Ogei Abadaba. That's it. He's an Ogei Abadaba because that's his testimony. And he's no gamer of it. The fact that he testified means that he wants to bring about a certain result. And the gavra is now a no gamer of it. And the masa matan can only be, that makes perfect sense, that someone who's no gamer of it can't be on the best. See, because once you're going into masa matan, I know that we don't have the problem of eid nasa dayan. Because eid nasa dayan would be when you actually, your vote counts. But to the extent that there is a maisa, you see, of a rah, which is part of the role of the dayan. All right, so the maisa of being mora halacha, of expressing yourself, is not prohibited by ein eid nasa dayan. But the idea of being an ogei b'dava, you see, in order to that aspect, that a dayan can't be someone who's no ogei b'dava. He has to disqualify himself because he's no gay b'davar. And any time you go to a Beis Din, if you go to a Beis Din, you state the issue, and for whatever reason, there's a member of the Beis Din who happens to be a no gay b'davar, because this could affect his right, it's a relative of his, or it's a business that he supports a shul, well, whatever the case may be, he's considered to be no gay b'davar. And he has to disqualify himself. Because he can't, he doesn't know, he no longer has that presumption of honesty. So therefore, the aid, one way to say that the aid, by virtue of the fact that he's testified, is now regarded as an ogeh b'davar, and therefore he can't participate. Because the dayanus aspect is only by people who don't have the blemish of ogeh b'davar. The other way to say is no. That by the mere fact that he testified does not define him as being an ogeh b'davar. What? The only thing is that we are concerned that there is a chashash in certain cases that due to the specific nature of the testimony, he's now put himself in a situation where it's very possible. He's put himself in a situation of danger, of vulnerability, and the argument that he's rendering casts doubt on the position that he's taking. Those are the two possibilities. That it's not an absolute phenomenon. That he's now, that the aid is an ogeh b'davar. That's one way of learning. The other way is to say that no. That it goes by the nature of the opinion per se. If the opinion per se is such that it has the effect of causing us to cast doubt, to look back on the Aedis, then that opinion, the Maskel Matan, that particular opinion is going to be disqualified. Can't be accepted. That's the other way of learning. Okay? So I've now shown, you see, according to the second way, the problem is a form, there is a form of Masa Umata, of argument, which is nogeya b'edus. When that occurs, but that doesn't have to be true in all cases. When you have, it limits itself to prohibiting a form of masu matan which has the effect of metzeh. In this case, it would be metzeh. It can't be literally, because obviously it's not edus, but which directly conflicts with the testimony. Now, that's not true of every masu matan, as you'll see. In dinamonis, it's not there. So you see what I'm saying? I've given you a conceptual approach. Now you can figure out who says what. See, tell me what the Rambam is saying. Again, back to Eidus, Perikei, Halacha Ches. Kol Eid Shehoyed, the Dini Nefashos. Any Eid who testified in Dini Nefashos, Eino Mora, B'din Zeh Hanere. He can't be Mora in the case of the Nera, the Nidon. You can't be malave neither schus nor chov. V'im amar yeshli lumod olav schus, and if he says I can be malave schus, meshaskin also. We silence him. Shenemar v'eid echad lo yana b'nefesh lamos. Bein l'schus, bein l'chov. Says that an eid echad cannot. Ona, benefesh lomos, bein l'schus, bein l'chava. Umahu zeh shenemer lomos, kolomer aid. Listen carefully. Aid shehoyed benefesh lomos. That once an aid has testified benefesh lomos, lo yana davar el yod v'yishtok. He can't say another word. But yod v'yishtok is very, very similar. It parallels the halacha of kivon shehigid shuvan echazir umagid. Once he's testified, that's it. Silence. Why? Because any further statement has the effect of undermining the Aedus. Further thing, Nefashos. In Dine Nefashos, the situation is such that your life is on the line. And if your life is on the line, so therefore, anything that you say would have the effect of Kimon Shehigat Shemen Chazamagin, because we're learning that the Isser, that Kimon Shehigat Shemen Chazamagin expresses itself in two ways. One, with regard to Aedus per se, that there's no further Aedus. But there's another concept that it's Usser. It's also an Isser on the Aedim to do any Misa which has the effect of undermining the Aedus, because the Aedus has to be Enes and Nachon. And therefore, this expressed itself in Dinei Nefashos. In Dinei Nefashos, it expressed itself in two ways. Of course, Kimon Shehigat. Kimon Shehigat is a principle in all Aedus. But here, once they testify in the nefashos, yishtot. Because here, the situation is such that any further argumentation, you see, has the effect of causing us to question the validity of the original edus. That's all it is. But it's not a principle. The Rambam is not saying that the principle that emerges from this is that you have to treat every eid as an ogeyabata. Whereas, in my opinion, well, for example, this would, before we go to the other side, this would fit very nicely with the explanation that by Dina Mamanis there is no schosa. You don't have that phenomenon. There is no, well, anyone can see the difference, first of all, because that's not a matter of life and death. It's a matter, it's just mamon. And in mamon, there's no reason to assume that he's in conflict with his original testimony, because whatever you say, it's chus for one, so for the other. Whatever you can argue on one side, you're going to say that he's afraid he'll cause him a loss of money. Yeah, but you can also argue and say that the other person who's going to gain money will pay him back. I mean, whatever you're going to say, there's no chus and chum. You see? Well, that's precisely why they made that argument, to tell you that this exists only when you have the phenomenon of a clear-cut schus or chova, and then the aid in that situation, any argumentation of the aid itself immediately causes us to reflect on his aidus. And that's a violation of kiman shehigit, because it uproots the concept of emes nachon hadavar. It's really no geya be'eduso. However, if you take the position, see, I'm trying to explain to you that you shouldn't get into the argument of a psychological argument that is he just as concerned in mominous, even though it's not as serious as that danger. You see, that's very hard to argue psychologically how the aid is feeling about it. But I'm merely saying, if you took the position that you defined the aid by virtue of being an aid, that he's already an ogeya b'davar. That's the way the halacha looks at him. So then he'd be debarred from any further participation in any case, because he's an ogevodot. He has a shame ogevodot. And that, I believe, is the position of those we showed him that hold that he can't participate, because an ogevodot is debarred from participation. But if you don't take that position, if you maintain that the mere fact that he's an A does not define him as an ogevodot, so then it's a different issue. Then you have an issue of an activity which creates the result of nogeya be'eduso. There the Rambam says, that's the pasuk told you, that's only benefesh lamos, the eid lo yana benefesh lamos. Once he's testified benefesh lamos, then he can't, that's it. That testimony has to be emes, nachon hadavar, and any further activity of the eid would immediately cast out on his eidus.